are the rhythm. You are the song in the rolling sea. You are a whisper in the hurricane. You're everything we need. You're everything we need. You're everything we need. You're everything we need. You're everything we need.
Beloved Book One, on one occasion, Nansen said to Joshua, "Nowadays, it is best to live and work among members of a different species from us." Joshua replied, "Leaving aside the question of different, let me ask you, what do you mean by species?" Nansen put his hands on the ground. Joshua walked towards Nansen from behind, trampling him into the ground, and then ran into the Nirvana Hall, crying, "I repent! I repent!" Nansen sent his attendant to ask Joshua what he was repenting for. Joshua replied, "I repent that I did not trample him twice over."
Manita. Zen, if anything. It is the only religious approach. Of playfulness, of laughter. Even the great masters play with each other, with their words, with their actions and their gestures. But all this play is always indicative of the eternal and the ultimate. Behind their laughter, you will find a great serenity, a tremendous peace. Their laughter is not hysterical. And you have to understand between these two laughters. The hysterical laughter is when you cannot stop it. When it has taken possession of you. And the non-hysterical laughter is, it is your will. It is your agreement the moment Nivedana's drum gives you a signal that it is time to stop, you stop it. The hysterical person will not be able to stop. It is beyond his capacity. The sane laughter is always within your hands. Secondly, the Zen masters playing with each other, indicating something that cannot be said. Their disciples discuss for centuries these small anecdotes of tremendous beauty and grandeur. They are not jokes. The West, for the first time when it came in contact with Zen through the Christian missionaries, thought that these are some kind of jokes. They could not conceive that these small anecdotes can carry scriptures. This one is between Nansen and Joseph, both recognized Buddhas, with thousands of disciples. And it was not an extraordinary event, it was everyday thing. The monasteries were in the mountains, very close to each other, and masters will come to meet each other. And their very playfulness will show one thing absolutely, that existence has not to be taken seriously. Those who take it seriously are psychically sick. Existence has to be taken playfully, with a joy. Only those who take it with joy and playfulness For them, existence opens its mysteries. In this anecdote, on one occasion, Nansen said to Josu, "Nowadays, it is best to live and work among members of a different species from us." He was saying that man has become too serious, has lost his playfulness, has become so knowledgeable, it has lost its innocence. Hence, it is better to mix with other species, birds and fish and other animals and trees, to have the whole universe as your commune. Not just human beings, they have gone too astray. The rose flower is exactly the same as it has been always. The change of time has not affected it. Nansen is saying that it is time now that Zen disciples should use their time more and more in contact with animals, birds, trees. A very significant statement. He is saying, perhaps you can learn the secret of existence through other species than man, because they are still in tune with existence. They are still part of existence. They have never separated. Man, in his egoistic effort, has separated from existence. Even a man like Bertrand Russell could wrote a book calling it The Conquest of Nature. The very idea of conquering nature separates you, makes nature and you enemies. And one thing is certain, the nature is so vast. Secondly, you are also part of nature. If nature simply stops cooperating with you, you will be simply dead. The nature is supplying you every moment, breathing, food. All that is needed for you. How can you think in terms of conquest? But nobody has objected to Bertrand Russell's book, because that is a representative book of the whole modern mind. Conquer, Now conquer the moon, conquer Mars, conquer this, conquer that. But nobody thinks that we are part of nature. Why not relax with it? Why not be at ease with it? What is the need of creating a conflict? And every conflict is going to defeat you because you are too small and nature is so vast. How many years you are going to live? Seventy years, 80 years. And you think of conquering existence, which has been here since eternity and is going to be here until eternity. Millions of people like you have come and gone. Not even footprints are left. Not even their shadows. Once I asked my father that I know your father's name and your grandfather's name. How many more you know? He said, only one more. Beyond that, we don't know who were the people whose blood is running in our veins. At the most, 4 or 5 generations, remember, and then there is a vast silence. All those people who were here with so much concern and anxiety and trouble and fight have simply disappeared as if they have never been. Zen does not take your life very seriously. It takes it only a playfulness. Just children playing by the sea beach. Collecting sea cells, colored stones, making houses of sand, our life is not more than that. There is nothing to be serious about it. I am reminded of an occasion, Gautam Buddha is entering into a village. On the boundary there is a river, and in the sand few children are playing by making castles of sand, and they were very serious. There were many children. If somebody disturbs somebody's castle, it is very easy to disturb a sand castle. Just throw a stone at it and it is gone. And they were shouting and being angry at each other. And Buddha stood there watching. Then it was time for the sun to set, and their mothers called them by nearby houses that come back home, it is time for your supper. And they all jumped on their own castles that they have made, for which they were fighting, that nobody should disturb them. They jumped on their own castles and never looked back, simply went home. Buddha said to his disciples who were with him, life is not much more than this. All your seriousness is about sand castles. And you yourself will leave them one day, tramping down, and you will not look back. The people who take it seriously miss the beauty of playfulness. This incident on one occasion, nonsense said to Joseph, nowadays, it was not so in the very ancient times. There are many stories for which there is no way to gather evidence for or against that man understood the language of animals, that man understood the language of the trees, that man was not apart from the world. He was just one part who has become a little more conscious than other parts. He was not in conflict. He lived joyfully, he died joyfully. Because it was just a wave, a tidal wave, but even the tidal wave has to disappear. Whatever is born will have to disappear. So what is there to be serious about? And that is proved by many scriptures, like Aesop's fables, in which man is not there at all, but only animals. But those animals are very representative. In a small anecdote, a very young goat is drinking water in a mountainous stream, and the lion comes and he thinks this is a good breakfast. But some rationality has to be. You cannot just jump and catch hold of the young goat. First, you have to rationalize your act. So he said, listen, your father was very much disrespectful to me. The little goat asked when it happened. He said, just yesterday. The little goat said, you must have mistaken. My father is dead for 6 months. The lion became very angry. His reason is nullified. Then he said that you are spoiling the water that I am drinking. You don't have any respect for the king of the animals. The poor goat said, just look at the stream. I am standing down. You are standing up. How I can spoil the water? The water is going downwards, not towards you. You are spoiling my water, but you have the right. You can do it. Seeing that he is being made a laughing stock, the goat was right. So he jumped on the goat and said, you don't know any manners, any etiquette. You speak so loudly before elders and made a good breakfast of the poor goat. But all those reasons Aesop's fables, every fable shows something about humanity. They are not about animals, they are all about man. Whatever you want to do, first you try to find a reason to do it. And if the reason is found to be irrelevant, you become angry. You try another reason, and if even that reason is not valid, then you act absolutely irrationally. You forget everything of logic and reason. Those were just strategies to catch someone who is weaker than you. Up to now, there was no evidence. Stories have been floating down the ages. But they have been thought as metaphorical, symbolic, because there was no way how to prove that animals understood man's language and man understood animals' language. Even trees were on talking terms. There was a communication, but now it is becoming possible through scientific research, at least about trees, because about animals, very few people have started to work. But once this is found to be absolutely true, that animals are certainly more intelligent than the trees. If it is proved that trees understand the language of man, not only understand, but what is being revealed by science is they even read your minds. You don't have to say. And this has become such a great research. They have special mechanisms. They attach the mechanism to the tree. It is something like a cardiogram that takes your heart beats and checks whether the heart is running in a healthy way or something is missing. The machine makes the graph. If heart is running harmoniously, the graph is harmonious. If the heart is not harmonious, then the graph sometimes goes up, sometimes goes too much down. It is not harmonious. There is disturbance. They use the same graph and the same cardiogram on trees, and they were surprised that if nothing is happening, the graph is harmonious. Then they bring a woodcutter with the idea that you have to chop the tree, and as the woodcutter comes closer and the tree can see the woodcutter, immediately the graph shows, it becomes worried. The harmony of the graph is disturbed. It has only seen. Now it is very mysterious because eyes are not part of the trees. How it has seen? Perhaps there are other ways of seeing also. We are not the only people who have eyes. We have a certain kind of eyes. The trees must be having some way to see that a woodcutter is coming. And not only to see, they are capable of reading his mind, that he is going to destroy their life. It has been also found that the woodcutter is told that you are not to cut the tree. You just pass by with your ass in your hand as if you are going to cut the tree. But if the mind is not to cut the tree, the graph remains harmonious. That is a solid proof that trees are capable of mind reading, which man is not capable. It has also been found that when one tree to which the woodcutter is coming to cut is not only affected by it, other neighboring trees also are affected. Their graphs also become disharmonious. Some friend, some neighbor with whom they have grown up lived in good times and bad times, in rains and in summer and in winter. Some old friend is going to be cut. So not only that tree which is going to be cut reads the mind of the woodcutter, other trees surrounding are also affected. But if the woodcutter with his axe goes on with no mind to cut, the grafts remain harmonious. This has been a tremendous experiment. It shows that trees somehow see. We don't know yet how they see. Somehow they can read the minds. It is absolutely difficult for us to comprehend the idea because we cannot read minds. Someday the research is going to be deeper and we may be able to see that they can understand speech. If they can understand the mind, what is mind? You are speaking inside that I am going to cut this tree. If they can understand just the idea in the mind, there is no difficulty. Why they cannot understand the words? And secondly, if they can understand the mind and can show their fear and worry and anxiety, there may be some way, perhaps they are speaking also, but we don't know their language. Perhaps their language sound range is either below us or above us. We can hear only a certain range of sound, and we can also see only a certain range. For example, the owl can see in the night. We cannot see. His eyes have a bigger range than our eyes. It has been always thought, and you can see it anywhere in India, particularly, snakes dancing with the flute player. The problem was that the science could not find any ears in the snake. So how they can respond to sound? They cannot hear. But the research went on, and now they have come with a new idea which satisfies. The snake hears through his whole skin. It is not a question of ears. Ears are also skin. It is nothing but a specialized skin. Eyes are also specialized skin. The snake hears through his whole body. That's why his dance has a beauty. Because the flute does not only affect his ears, it affects his whole body. And because it has no bones, it has a flexibility. But the discovery that the snake can hear from his whole skin perhaps it can speak also in some way. Just we have to go on working on different ways of connecting. Dolphins have been researched recently very deeply. And it has been found that dolphins have a certain way of speaking. They use a totally different system that man uses. They use sonar waves. We cannot hear them. But millions of dolphins in the ocean, one dolphin can speak to dolphins miles away because the sonar sound goes like a wave into the water, just like radio waves. You cannot hear radio waves because you don't have any receptive mechanism. But if you have a radio, what is radio? A receptive mechanism. At this moment, thousands of radio waves are passing from all the stations of the world around you. But you cannot hear them. Just have a small radio which makes the range of hearing bigger and you can start catching stations. In the last World War it happened, one man got shot in the ear. The bullet was taken out, but it was a great coincidence. His ear healed, but he started listening to the local radio station. First, nobody believed him. Everybody laughed that, "Are you mad? Have anybody in the history has heard from ears, radio waves?" But he insisted and he said, "I am ready to prove it." Finally, the doctors thought that some experiments should be done, at least for his satisfaction. Nobody believed that it is possible. So they put a radio in a second room, put it on to the local station, and a typist was typing whatever was coming on the radio. And on the other room, where there was no radio, that man who has started listening from the ear, he was writing everything that was coming. When they were compared, they were exactly the same. The man was right. But he was getting crazy. because there was no way to put the radio off. Early from 6 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock in the night, he has to listen every advertisement, every news. And he was so much engaged in his mind that he was not able to do anything else. He could not talk you, because there was so much going on inside. Finally, they have to operate the whole ear, take it off. But it gave it an absolute certainty that there is a possibility someday that we may not have to carry radios. Just small changes in the ear itself, certain surgical changes with a button, perhaps attached to your lobe, so you can put it off or put it on, it is up to you. No need to carry a radio. I am saying this because dolphins speak in a totally different wavelength, so we cannot understand that anything is happening. No noise. But miles away, the other dolphins are getting the message. Dolphins are being studied very deeply, because it seems they are the only animals in the whole world who have a bigger brain than man. It has to be discovered in what way it works. Certainly, it is superior to man's brain, but in a different direction, in a different dimension. Its work does not crisscross with man's mind. So what Nansen is saying, that in ancient times there were people who could talk to other creatures of other species, nowadays all that is completely forgotten. Nowadays, particularly for the seekers, he suggests it is best to live and work among members of a different species from us. You can see the difference. In the Upanishads, there is a story about a young man, Svetketu. He studied in the nearby forest university, graduated with honors, came back home with a very great ego because he has come first in the university. His father looked out from the window he was coming, And he told his wife, that he has gained knowledge. One can see even in his walk, his ego, pride, but we have not sent him for that. I will have to send him again. So don't come in between. Don't start weeping and crying that you are sending the son again. Swetketu came, the father said, don't enter the house. I know that you have learned all the scriptures, but have you known who you are? Swetketu said, it was not part of the course. I have learned the four Vedas, all the Upanishads. But the question, who am I, was not part of the syllabus in the university. Father said, then go back to the old seer who is the head of the forest university and ask him the question. And unless you learn it, don't come back, because there is no point of coming back. I am living just to see you, that you have known yourself. He was returned from the outside of the door. Swetketu was very much disturbed, shocked. He was hoping to be received with great welcome, and this was a strange welcome. He went to his master and told him that my father says, what you have taught to me is absolutely useless. You have not taught to me the real thing, who am I? The master said, that is true, but it is a difficult task, very difficult. He said, whatever, I have to do it, because without doing it, I cannot enter into my house. So the master said, you do one thing. Take these 100 cows, and when they have become 1,000, by giving birth to new kids, remain in the deepest forest where nobody comes. And even if you see somebody, hide. Don't speak human language. Just remain with the cows. And when they have become 1,000, bring them back. A strange idea. Swetketu thought, when they will become 1,000, it may take half of his life. But the master was saying, so he took those 100 cows went to the forest as deep as possible, where there was no question of anybody coming. Few days, ideas continued in the mind. But how can you continue to think the same things every day? And nobody there is to talk to. Finally, he became silent. Years passed. He became almost like a cow. Just living with the cows, sleeping with the cows, taking care of the cows. The cow world was his world. He forgot completely the humanity. The story is so beautiful that he has forgotten even the idea that when they become 1,000, he has to return, because that is language. And he had forgotten even to count. And things were going beautiful. Utter silence. The story says that finally one cow had to say, that I cannot resist the temptation to speak, because we are now 1,000. And you seem to have forgotten everything. Now it is time to take us back to the Master. Swetketu brought the 1,000 cows. The disciples saw from far away 1,000 cows. And they told the Master that Swetketu is coming after many, many years. And he is bringing 1,000 cows. The Master said, don't use the word Swetketu anymore. Say 1,001 cow. Are coming back. And that's how it was. Swetketu came and stood there just as other cows were standing. He didn't say a single word. And his eyes have become so pure, so silent, that the Master shook him. That now, get out of your cowhood. You are capable now to face your father. Go back. So without saying anything, he simply went to his father. The father looked again from the window, he said, my God. He has really known. And I myself don't know who am I. So he jumped out from the back door, telling his wife that it does not look right because he will touch my feet. It does not look right that a man who knows should touch the feet of a man who is ignorant. It is very embarrassing. I am going. You take care of your son. It may take few years for me. I am old, but I will try. And I will not come back again unless I have known who I am. I cannot face my son. He is coming so beautifully, so humble, so not knowing, with no pride, with no ego. Just a pure silence, a cool breeze. It is possible, if you live with trees, I have given Mukta to look after my gardens. So for almost 20 years she is looking after my gardens. And she has become so silent. She only fights with somebody disturbs her trees. Then she is ferocious. And particularly this Nivedana is her arch enemy. Because he goes on making waterfalls that disturbs trees, because he has to make place for his waterfalls. Other than that, she is in the ashram but almost absent. Living with trees, one becomes a tree. In the innermost being, the same silence. What Nansen is saying, that nowadays it is best to live and work among members of a different species from us. Josu replied, leaving aside the question of different, this is the game how the masters have been playing with. He says, leaving aside the question of different, because first you will have to prove that anybody is different. All is one. Who is different? The whole cosmos is one unity. What is different? But for the time being, leaving aside the question of different, let me ask you, what do you mean by species? You are making categories. In the innermost silence, there are no categories, no species. Who you are in your silence, a cow, a man, a lion, in the innermost core, you are just suchness. No name can be given to that suchness. Josu himself is a great master. He says, leaving aside the question of different, let me ask you, what do you mean by species? You are creating divisions in existence where no divisions exist. He is perfectly right philosophically. Nansen put his hands on the ground. Just as if he walks on fours, like any animal. He did not answer the question in a philosophical way. He did not discuss about species. He simply put his hands on the ground, showing that existentially, philosophically, there is no question of categories, but existentially, superficially, there is a difference. Few animals walk on four, few animals walk on two, few animals walk on earth, few animals jump from tree to tree. But he is not saying anything. Rather than saying, he is being. He puts his hands and he becomes a cow. The same cow I have been talking about, Swetketu. Josu walked towards Nansen from behind, trampling him into the ground, and then ran into the Nirvana hall, crying, I repent, I repent. He walked on his hands, trampling him down, and then running towards the Nirvana hall, crying, I repent, I repent. Nansen sent his attendant to ask Josu what he was repenting for. Josu replied, I repent that I did not trample him twice over. A strange answer. In the first place, his behavior was strange, that he trampled on Nansen. But in Zen, it is acceptable. What he is saying by trampling on his hands, he is saying that I am a far superior consciousness than animals. I have reached the highest peak of consciousness. And they are just walking on four on the earth unconsciously. I trample down the unconsciousness. He is not trampling down Nansen. He is trampling down his gesture of being a cow. And he is existentially right. But then he ran towards the Nirvana hall, crying, "I repent, I repent." What he has done, Nansen has understood perfectly well. That a man of consciousness, awareness, enlightenment cannot have any communication with animals. It is difficult to communicate even with human beings. What to say about animals? The difference is too far. Light years of difference. So Nansen has not objected his trampling. He understood it, that he is right. But why he is shouting, "I repent, I repent"? There is nothing to repent. He answered me rightly. So he sent his attendant to ask Josu what he was repenting for. There is no reason to repent. You did exactly what was the right response in such a situation. Josu replied, "I repent that I did not trample him twice over." Because once may not be enough to change her attitude. That disciples should work with nature, with animals, with birds. Just one time trampling over may not be enough. That's why I am repenting. Perhaps twice may have been right. Nansen has not made any comment on it. That means he accepted it. That even if he has trampled him twice, nothing would have been wrong in it. Josu was as great a master as Nansen. But they are playing like small children. That is the speciality of Zen. A point of departure from all other philosophical systems. A poem by Sekiso. Hundreds of open flowers all come from the one branch. Look, all their colors appear in my garden. I open the chattering gate, and in the wind I see the spring sunlight. Already it has reached worlds without number. The quality of a Zen poetry has always to be remembered that it is pictorial. Don't try to understand, try to see it. Hundreds of open flowers, try to see it, don't try to understand. Visualize, hundreds of open flowers all come from the one branch, look. All their colors appear in my garden. I open the chattering gate and in the wind I see the spring sunlight. Already it has reached worlds without number. In every other language of the world, poetry has to be understood. Zen poetry has to be seen, visualized. It simply creates a world of flowers, colors, sun rays. If you can silently visualize it, you may even smell the fragrance of the flowers. You may even feel the warmth of the sun rays. It is only a question with what intensity, with what totality you create the world according to the Zen poet. Just drop the old idea of trying everything verbally. It is a visualization. It is a totally different way. Otherwise, the poetry is not much. If you verbalize it, it is not much. Then there are great poets around the world. In comparison to those great poets, these poets will look very poor. But there is no comparison possible. Because they have a different dimension, meaning. They are intellectualization. You don't have to visualize Shelley or Byron. You have to understand. It is a very conceptual way. And that is the way all over the world. Only Zen is different in every ways. His poetry is not to be understood. It is not a question of intellect. It is a question of feeling, of creating in visualization, in your silence with closed eyes, the whole world that he is talking about, the flowers, you have to see them. The colors, you have to see them. And when you see the colors and the flowers and the chattering gate, as you open it, it crackles and the sun rays entering through the gate, reaching to the flowers, you may smell the fragrance. You may even pluck few flowers This is a very existential way of expression. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, are you not committed even to truth, to freedom? If you are not, is that because truth and freedom are such an intrinsic part of you that there is no possibility of a relationship, which a commitment is, with them?" Manisha, your understanding is right. I am not connected with truth. Truth is not something separate that I have to be committed to it. It is my very being. Love or freedom, compassion or joy, they are all aspects of my own consciousness. They are not separate. There is no question of commitment. You commit only to something which is other than you. And my effort here is to make you aware that as you penetrate deeper into your consciousness, all these things become available. It is not that you have to cultivate them. Just by penetrating deeper and deeper into consciousness, you come across love, you come across compassion, you come across truth, you come across freedom. You don't have to do anything. You have your only effort is to penetrate deeper into consciousness, and everything else comes on its own accord. These are the flowers of consciousness. Now, something serious. The BBC interrupts its prime time showing of the Olympic Games with the following announcement: "Ladies and gentlemen, the planet Earth has been just received some bad news and some good news. The bad news is that the Earth has just been invaded by Martians. The good news is they eat politicians and piss petrol." Rock Hunk, the famous Hollywood movie star, strolls into a bar wearing his shirt open to the waist and flexing his muscles. He sees gorgeous Gloria sitting alone at the bar sipping a martini. He strides up to her, leans close and whispers in her ear, "Hey, baby, I would really love to get into your pants. I'm sorry," says Gloria with a smile, "but I don't think that is possible." "Why not?" asks Rock. Because, says Gloria, standing up to leave, there is only enough room in there for one asshole. Cardinal Cat's ass is caught stealing a frozen chicken from the Vatican supermarket by trying to hide it under his robe. When Pope the Pollock hears about this, he is very angry. Do you know, spouts the Pollock Pope, that when you are stealing a chicken from my supermarket, you are breaking one of God's commandments. Yes, replies Cat's ass with downcast eyes, but I did not want the chicken for myself. I wanted it for that new secretary you just hired. What? My new secretary? Shouts the Pollock, nearly hysterical. You would lose your immortal soul for one young secretary? Pope the Pollock throws his arms up in the air and really freaks out. Fuck the secretary, he shouts. I did, replies the cardinal, but she wants a chicken too. Nivedana. Silence. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards with absolute urgency as if this is the last moment of your life. Go penetrating deep into the very life source that is your center and also the center of the whole existence. The meeting of your center and the center of the whole existence is symbolically represented by the Buddha. At this point you become a Buddha, the awakened one. You have entered a new world of truth, of beauty, of blissfulness. Get soaked with all these qualities. Get drenched with the awareness of being a Buddha, because you have to bring this Buddha back with you, and you have to live this Buddha in your every activity, gesture, word, silence, 24 hours around the clock. Then only there is a possibility to reach the highest peak of consciousness. To make it clear, Nividano, relax and just watch the body, the mind. You are neither. You are the witness. Get centered on the witness. Everything comes and goes, only the witness is immortal. It is never born and never dies. The other name of this witness is the Buddha. This evening was beautiful on its own, but your presence, your witnessing has made it a majestic glory, a splendor unparalleled. Thousands of flowers are showering on you. collect as many flowers as possible. Soon Nividano will be calling you back. Gather as much as you can of the experience. You have to bring it from the center to the circumference. Nivedana, come back, but bring the Buddha with you. Be graceful. Remember the way Buddha will get up and sit down. The same grace, the same beauty, and the heart dancing in the same way. Rejoice and remember you are the fortunate ones. Because outside the Buddha auditorium, nobody is concerned with his own interiority. People are worried about trivia, mundane things. Feel fortunate that you have found a place where thousands of others are also crossing the same bridge, passing the same path, reaching to the same center. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate the gathering of 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes.
Thank you.
are the rhythm.